Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight we have everyone in the house, starting with PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Here via the popculturenetwork.com. And we also have agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Do not smash the giant Doombot.
And make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Follow the Google account or Google Plus page, TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to give us 5-star reviews and good reviews so we can move up the power rankings. Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media accounts. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. And we want to remind everyone that we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you're home and want to tune in live, just make sure to go to the homepage of theclicknation.com and the link with the YouTube video will be there for you to tune in.
You don't have to be home live. You could watch it if you've got a great wireless data plan.
This is true. Who cares if you're at a relative or friend's house trying to have quality time, with us? We're your family, too. Your comic book family.
That's right.
So, how was everyone's Memorial Day weekend?
It was all right. Got some rest, a little bit of relaxation. How about you guys?
Well, being that I'm not a normal, I was working. So, it was just another day. But it was still cool.
Was the comic book store open on Monday, Dirt?
I don't know. I wasn't there. my wife and I actually went up to Chicago to celebrate our anniversary. We stayed at the same hotel we stayed at our honeymoon. And it's funny because when we went on our original anniversary, our original honeymoon 14 years ago, we had all these plans. We were right at the start of the Magnificent Mile in Chicago. And we had all these plans that we were going to spend that long weekend, you know, walking up and down, going to the shops and eating at the restaurants and all that kind of stuff. And the first day we're there, we walk out of our hotel and we turn the corner, and there's Buddy Guy's Legends Blues Club.
Nice.
And we walked into the club, and we just stayed there the entire honeymoon. We just kept going back every night. So for our anniversary, we just went up to Chicago, stayed at the same hotel, just went to Buddy Guy's the entire time.
That's pretty awesome. Happy anniversary.
So thank you. 14 years.
Great. I just spent Sunday with the parents. We grilled out Sunday, so we just spend Monday doing nothing, which I actually did just a little cleaning around the house. But so it sounds like everyone had a better weekend than perhaps Edgar Wright, who Friday was announced.
Nice segue.
Aha. Who, before Marvel Studios decided to shut their doors for the weekend, they decided to try to slip something under the door, hope no one would notice. But they announced that Edgar Wright would not be directing the Ant-Man movie that's been in production or in the works for, the past 10 years.
That he's been the spearhead of for the past 10 years.
Yep.
Like, he's the whole reason that movie's being made, because he kept pushing for it and pushing for it.
That's right.
Yeah, so he also he had tweeted some picture, which I guess was representative of something, but he quickly pulled, relatively quickly pulled it down. And I guess that picture was supposed to suggest something. but that's just speculation I'm throwing to people who ever posted it.
Yes, of course, there's been lots of speculation on why he is off the project now. So you can go to your favorite rumor site and look for that if you want to. Oh, was I segueing again?
No, I said speculate away.
Oh, yeah, speculate away. So that wasn't the only Marvel Entertainment news. Of course, everyone knows that Netflix and Marvel signed a deal where they're going to – Netflix will live – well, not live stream, but stream four solo series to lead up to a Defenders-type movie. And Daredevil was going to be the first series to launch, and they were getting – it's going to start, I guess, production in a couple weeks here. And Drew Goddard, who was set to be the showrunner on it, is no longer going to be. And he was quickly replaced by actually, I need to click the link to see who the guy is that's replacing him. Let me click it now.
Stephen M. McKnight or something like that.
Is that the guy that did Godzilla?
Not sure.
Stephen, did you say his name already?
I don't know if I got the last name right, but I know it was Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen something. Stephen S. DeKnight.
DeKnight, yeah.
Okay, so it's DeKnight. He's from Spartacus, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Angel. Okay. A bunch of shows I haven't watched before, so I have no real opinion. Oh, yeah, so Drew Goddard is going to be pinning the Spider-Man spinoff Sinister Six. So people were wondering that maybe if that's the reason why, so he could put more time to that. And of course, Sony and Marvel not playing nice. So more speculation. And the last bit of Daredevil news, Boardwalk Empire's Charlie Cox was cast to play Matt Murdock.
Anybody watch Boardwalk Empire?
No, I was kind of taken aback by this news. I was, it makes me want to at least watch something that he's in before passing judgment. So.
Right.
So, yes.
Good on him. But
that'll be launching in 2015, the Daredevil series. And let's see, in other news. What do I want to read? Okay, so also during the three-day weekend, Brian Michael Bendis decided to share an image on his Tumblr concerning Miles Morales joining the cast of All New X-Men, which, of course, has people saying, huh?
Yeah,
hey, what you talking about, Willis? What you talking about, Willis?
What are you talking about, Brian? So, of course, Miles Morales has not appeared in the 616 Marvel Universe. So we have to wonder, is it going to be the ultimate version of Miles Morales, or is it the 616 version that will at least be appearing in the book? Who knows if it'll be an ongoing cast member. And of course, the roster for that series has kind of been fluid anyway. Angel left and came back. Cyclops is out in space. So and at least we'll have an answer, I guess, whenever that issue, I'm assuming it's the September issue, since it's probably like the teasing stuff for the 3 month solicits, 3 months in the advance solicits. Mm-hmm. And let's see what else we got.
Was that Iron Patriot news this week, or was that last week?
That was last week.
Okay.
About where the series is canceled or not.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, because when it was launched, I heard it was launched, you know, it was an ongoing series. And even before the book came out, I heard it was going to be a limited series. So I don't really know what to think. It's probably best for it to be a limited series.
Huh. Well, that's telling. Okay.
Yeah, so there's also speculation on other stuff ending. I saw this before the show, and I'm actually going to skip to it now. So Marvel really canceled Fantastic Four to snub Fox.
I was just reading this. I saw this in the in the news list, and I wanted to read the piece on the Bleeding Cool website. And it's interesting.
The reason that I included it because I felt like ranting about it.
Go ahead. And,
well, I was going to rant about it in tweet form, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm about to do a show in like an hour or so. Just bringing it up out here. So I read the article, and I don't feel like clicking to open it again, so I'm going to go off what I remember from it. So actually, I think last week or week before last, Marvel released some like 75-year celebration image with a whole bunch of heroes and stuff on it, and people that like to pay attention and nitpick everything decide to look at the image and say, oh, there's no X-Men or Fantastic Four characters on here. What gives, Marvel? You have room for Captain Marvel and Iron Fist, but you can't even get Wolverine on the image, and you have like two or three members of Guardians of the Galaxy. And so Tom Brevoort, of course, on his Tumblr or Form Springs or whatever it is, decided to answer the question by not really answering the question, basically saying, like, y'all need to stop trying to find stuff to be mad about. And sometimes an image is just an image, I think is what the phrase he said, which is true. And sometimes the image isn't an image. And basically it goes back to the whole, you know, of course, Spider-Man is on the image, which is over at Sony Studios. But of course, Marvel also has the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon that they're making lots of money off of, and I guess gets good ratings for Disney Channel. And of course, there's been rumored that Guardians of the Galaxy is going to get a cartoon series, which I could see happening. You know, they got all the whole Smash Brothers has a cartoon, all these cartoons, but no X-Men cartoon, which I've noticed for a couple of years now. And there probably would never be another X-Men cartoon.
Not while Fox has the right, unless Marvel has the able to regain the TV rights like they did with Spidey.
Yeah, I was thinking that might have been the case, but I'm not sure.
Oh, is that what it is? They got the TV rights for Spider-Man?
Right. Right. Marvel obtained Marvel regained the TV rights for Spidey. That's how they were able to do. That's why Spectacular Spider-Man was canceled.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah, because they. Same with Avengers Assemble, which is exactly. Avengers Earth Minus Heroes, which. Had to go bye-bye. The better show had to go bye-bye. Oh, yeah, speaking of which, something else I'm going to complain about. So last week before...
Wait, are you done ranting about this FF stuff? You
got me on another sidetrack. Before the weekend, Marvel made a big deal about Thanos makes his animated debut in Avengers Assemble this weekend. I actually was home, and I had just walked the dog, and... When I got home, I saw Avengers Assemble was on TV. So I said, hey, I haven't really watched this season. I'll sit here and eat my cereal, bowl of cereal, and watch. I watched. It was an okay finale, I guess. And so basically, Thanos shows up for the last 5 seconds of the show, just like in the movie. It's like he quickly shows up, and then the credits roll. I was like, what? So... I just typical Marvel, but when I first read the Bleeding Cool article, my first instinct is like, yeah, I don't really believe that there. So the article says that Marvel plans to cancel all Fantastic Four comic books, so I guess Fox can't make money off of them, but they're comics. So my first instinct is, yeah, I don't believe that because Marvel will just be hurting themselves by not producing comics featuring Fantastic Four.
And I was thinking, why would it even matter? Because they could still make if they really, really wanted to, they could still make the, you know, any movies. So it wouldn't really have to do with that. I mean, yeah, they wouldn't have the tie, but I mean, the tie is not really one that, you know, matters.
From what I was able to gather is that they're not looking to help promote any Fox movies.
Right.
So, you know, the goal is to not provide any help. You know, but, as little tie-in as there might be between the mainstream FF book and the movie, that Fox is planning to produce, which is supposed to be a reboot. You know, despite that, the name and the titles are still out there, so I guess they just don't want to help out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's by that rationale, wouldn't they cancel all the X-Men books?
Right.
Yeah.
I think the X-Men books just sell
they
too
said,
well.
Yeah, they said well, yeah. What's the word I'm looking for? They basically say that the X-Men comics make too much money for them to stop producing.
Yeah, I don't think the problem with Fantastic Four is that they want to hurt Fox. It's that Fantastic Four comics have not sold well ever since they did the whole Jonathan Hickman storyline where they killed the Human Torch and then brought him back 6 months later. I mean, ever since that happened, the books – because I mean I can tell you at least from our store, every store here in town, ever since they pulled that and Human Torch came back, everybody just dropped the books. They didn't like them anymore. And then the last run that they did where they were traveling through time and whatever, like that series went over like a lead balloon.
Yeah, I was going to say that was just tough to read.
So
I think
I just think the franchise is hurting, and it's probably in their best interest to just kind of not do anything Fantastic Four for a year or so, let right. people want the characters to come back, and then get some five-star team to relaunch it, and then you'll sure. be good to go.
What's funny about that is that, you know, I read the FF books when Hickman was on it, and I thought Hickman did a great job, even including the death of Johnny Storm and his return. I thought that was well done. But once Hickman left the book and they rebooted it, you know, the reboot story just wasn't good. You know, it's as simple as that, I think.
Well, a lot of people dropped it who were subscribers after he came back.
I see.
Because it was such a big deal that he was dead, and then suddenly out of nowhere he was back, and it wasn't even a year later, you know. No. Then suddenly everybody just, they were pissed off, and they were just like, screw this book.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it would make sense if the statistics showed that whatever Marvel does in the comic books affects the movies or gets more sales for the movies, but that doesn't happen. And also, the movie success doesn't really equal comic book success.
Right.
That's been proven a couple times. So no matter how successful Fantastic Four is, the movie, it probably wouldn't really affect the comic or give a boost. It might get a little boost, but so yeah, basically I'm agreeing with what Dirt just said. Dirt always says stuff more eloquently than me. But yeah, I just thought that article was kind of interesting. So, and it sparked good conversation. So
yeah.
And it sounds like Fantastic Four will be going away, which would be fine with me. I wanted to give the Ultimate FF a try, but they'd have to switch artists on that for me to.
Yeah, the story is actually not bad in Ultimate FF, but the art is just terrible.
And I feel confident saying that because so many other people have said that too. So
yeah,
it's not just us.
Yeah, and Fantastic Four Prime, it was like I read the first one and it was just like Silver Surfer book. It was like, hey, I forgot it was coming out.
Oh yeah, Silver Surfer does have a book now, doesn't he?
Yep.
Okay. Lex Luthor's wealth compared to the real world's richest people.
Somebody basically said, hey, if he was real, how much would he be worth? And he's like, he's rich, but he is nowhere near top 20 or top 100 or in this case, I think 200-300.
No kidding.
I believe it was of the richest people. Yeah. So take that, Luthor. Excuse me.
And
do it.
Let's see. Dynamite Comics announces a Shaft publishing deal.
Damn right.
Shut your mouth.
There's no There's no sound effect for that.
You could do like the doorbell. And there's a couple instances of comic book people getting in arguments. I don't know if I feel like reading these articles now. But there was one about comics for kids that I saw yesterday, last night, and this morning. I guess the Comics for Kids is supposed to be a nonprofit organization that tries to raise money, get comic books into kids' hands by donations, either physical comics or money. And I guess their Twitter account tweeted out a picture of a kid with holding the picture or some kind of like award or something saying like, help me get comics, or this kid did a good job, so he deserves free comics or whatever. And the kid's name was on the piece of paper he was holding. And people, of course, like I said, people on the internet have keen eyes because they inspect stuff a lot closer than I do or ever would. They saw that the kid's last name had the same last name as the person running the Comics for Kids Twitter account. So people deduced that the person running the nonprofit was just trying to get people to donate comics for his relative, who turned out to be like the guy's cousin or something. So that sparked the whole thing, and Bleeding Cool picked up on it, and the guy running the nonprofit got angry and tried to get his followers to attack people that were criticizing him online and yada, yada, yada. And then this morning, Scotty Young went at some, what was it, Redbubble?
Yeah. Redbubble.
Yeah, I guess some company that lets people take images and make T-shirts out of them. So, of course, people have been taking comic book artists' images and making T-shirts out of them and, I guess, selling them and getting profit without the creator's consent. So a bunch of creators are trying to take Redbubble down now. And Charles Soule, who, of course, is a lawyer, looks like he's going to be giving some tips to Scotty Young on the legal action that he can take. All this was in Twitter conversations.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So, when comic book people strike. That should be like the name of the segment. Like when people get to beefing online or something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but to be fair, that one's like kind of, I mean, that one's kind of legit because, I mean, if they are unfairly just taking other people's work and putting it on a shirt without kind of, if credit, much less, you know, some kind of compensation, that's kind of bad.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah, I'm not saying any of this isn't warranted. I just said we need like a segment of the show where we say comic book creators strike, and then there's like lightning and thunder sound effects played.
I was saying this would probably be one of the more legit ones.
And that's it for news. Yes. All right. Let's get in some reviews. Let's get in some. Let's see. What did everyone read this week?
Oh, we're supposed to read.
Unfortunately, yes. Oh, yeah, I did read Futures End number 4. Let me add that to my list.
Well, then why don't we just pull it up?
Go for
it. Since we're at that point, maybe we can just jump to it. So Futures End number 4. Who all read this?
I read did most of it.
Wow, everybody. All right.
Actually, you know what? I haven't finished it. That's the reason
I mean, yeah, I'm with Tim. I didn't get to quite finish it.
My problem with Future's End right now is I don't care about Frankenstein. And he's pretty much a big push of the last issue and this issue. And I really don't care. So that part of the story is just kind of, it's like, oh, I got to read this part again. You know,
it's still kind of fun for me to read his word bubbles because I kind of say it in my head. Like,
you know, I do too. I do that too. But the problem is that, you know, the first couple times he talks, he says like these giant paragraphs of text. And it's like, why? It's
exposition.
Exposition.
And then they have these villains who are planning some sort of attack. They want to break into Mr. Terrific's company to steal something. And again, you don't know who these people are. They're trying to get some other bad guy to help him, and you don't know who that guy is. So you basically have three characters you don't care about planning something that you don't quite understand. So there, it just feels like another waste of time. You do have this interesting part in the middle where apparently Red Robin, Tim Drake, was killed in battle, but apparently he's under an assumed alias, and he's hiding out in New York City.
Right, and he's got facial hair.
Yeah,
he's a civilian. Yeah,
Wonder Woman is tracking him down. So
is that Wonder Woman?
Yeah,
that's Lois Lane. I thought
that's what I meant. That's what I meant to say. That's what I meant to say. I looked at there's an ad for Wonder Woman right there. Yeah, that was Lois Lane, and then you go back to the Grifter story, which at least I enjoy that part of the story. But right in the middle, of course, they throw in King Faraday, who I don't remember hardly anything about King Faraday.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
If there's anything about him that's supposed to be important in this story, they kind of failed in giving that to you so you have any reason to care, like why he's there or why he's attacking or how he's doing it or what his end game might be. So it's like there are a couple interesting threads there, but then you have these other moments where it's just like if there's any sort of importance to what's going on, they totally failed in getting that across.
If I remember, I think King Faraday was like the liaison to between the UN and the Justice League or something like that. I can't remember. I remember he popped up on the Justice League cartoon a couple of different times, but I don't, you know.
Well, yeah, but that was the old 52, or right. That was the animated 52, or
right.
Anna 2, or whatever. So I it's like I want to like this story a lot. But this issue just isn't doing it for me. I want them to refocus. You know, I don't know if maybe it's the problem of having five different writers doing different parts of the story, trading back and forth or what. But I don't know. It just felt like I got half an issue I kind of was interested in, and half of it I couldn't really care about.
I will say I think I'm enjoying this weekly series more than Batman or Tunnel, just because there's so many different characters involved, even if they are people I don't care about, because at least it's given me a chance to read a comic that has Firestorm, even though his name makes no sense to his actual power set, and Frankenstein, you know, Batman, and they're also kind of similar in that, you know, each issue is kind of dealing with a different person. Like so far, like all the different Batman issues have at least tried to include like Stephanie Brown in this issue and Batwing in this one and Red Robin in this one. So this is like, this has Firestorm for like two issues. And I guess, what's his name? Frankenstein for two. And I guess whoever else is going to be involved in it with Grifter in the background and all the issues. I don't know. I like all the different characters being involved more in this.
I guess I was also kind of disappointed that with Batman Beyond supposedly being a focus of it, he's not in this issue.
And, he shows up in on a billboard, or at least as far as I've read, he shows up in a billboard.
Yeah. He's just like, there's a news report in the background, playing on a giant TV screen on the side of a building, and that's it. So, I don't know. I guess also part of the problem is with all the different things they're juggling, it's hard to see how they really intertwine other than the fact that they're all happening at the same time. But otherwise, how are they really related? You know, Grifter is going around killing aliens. What does that have to do with Red Robin being in hiding, you know, and growing a beard, you know?
Maybe I wonder if it has anything to do with how Stormwatch got killed. Because I actually don't even remember how that happened in the first issue.
They got blown up.
Yeah,
well, I know they got blown up. I can't remember.
In this issue, don't they?
Well, they talk about how they were blown up, but the whole thing was you don't know who or why or how. There was something coming, and Apollo went out to check on it, and he got killed, and then the whole ship blew up.
So maybe it has something to do with the Damonites or the Runlands or whatever, those people there in the Green Lantern Blitz who I don't like.
The Durlins?
Durlins, yeah.
Durlins, oh my gosh. It shows you how long it's been since I read a Green Lantern book.
Well, Durlins actually were always part of Legion of Superheroes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think they really appeared much in modern-day DC stuff until they did that Invasion storyline. Who was it? Todd McFarlane did the artwork.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. I like kind of just dropped the Green Lantern books. Okay, so that's Future's End. Can I rant about Nightwing 30?
Sure, go ahead.
I didn't like it.
I mean, when I read it, you didn't have to rant about it. I think it's on like two or three lists. So, you didn't like it? Go on.
And the only reason I didn't like it, so Batman and Nightwing have a sparring contest as Batman tries to convince Nightwing to go undercover. And that whole sequence was just stupid. It was Batman beating up Nightwing as Nightwing says, "No, I don't want to stay dead." "Yes, you have to stay dead. Kick, punch." And so that went on for far too long. And plus, maybe I just read it wrong, or I need to reread it to understand it more. I'm not understanding why Batman wants Dick to go undercover. Because supposedly Spiral, from what I understand, Spiral wants to kill superpower people. So I guess Batman wants to put him undercover to take them down from the inside, maybe. But even that explanation, I explained it better than it was explained in the comic, I think.
Yeah.
Did I understand that correctly?
I thought Spiral was the group taking on that... what did they call them? The Fist of Cain. I thought the Fist of Cain was the one that was like serial killers working as a team trying to kill
people. But they're the ones trying to kill super people?
I think, yeah. They're the ones that they attack in the, Nairobi jungle or whatever at the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Fist of Cain.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah.
That was all. I'm glad that you mentioned that because I was going to. My biggest criticism of this book is that the opening was completely incomprehensible to me.
Yeah.
It lost me. I was reading it. And I'm like, what on earth does this have to do with Nightwing?
Yeah, because the way I read it, it sounded like Spiral was the bad guys, but then I thought Spiral was always the good guys.
I think Spiral is the team that was supposed to be trying to stop the Fist of Cain.
See, all this discussion proves is the issue didn't do a good job of explaining what was supposed to be happening.
It felt like the beginning section where he's fighting the Fist of Cain, and then the last section where he meets up with Spiral. It was like those two were one comic book. And then you had another comic book stuck in the middle where he's fighting with Batman. The artwork was different. The tone of the story was different.
Right.
It didn't mesh together very well. And
this was a quickly thrown together book.
It was like they had these different ideas that they were going to do. Like they were going to stretch it out over a couple months. They're like, no, you got to wrap it up, finish it up now. So they just kind of jammed it all together.
Especially since, James Tynion was supposed to have been the writer on the comic, and then they switched that once the Grayson ongoing series was announced. So, horrible way to end the Nightwing series.
And also, they introduced...
Agreed.
They introduced the new Huntress in this book.
Or just her name, her civilian name, was introduced.
Well, no, she is... She's the one who saves Dr. Tompkins at the beginning and sprouts the giant purple wings out of her back.
Really?
That's her. And then you see her.
Are you serious?
She's the one at the end who invites Dick Grayson to join Spiral.
That's how incomprehensible this book was to me. Ugh.
So she has wings.
It's the same character. You only realize.
Did you read Red Bull?
You only know it's the same character because she's got the same hair and the same earrings. But otherwise, her face is covered at the beginning, so you don't really see her that well, and she's got a completely different uniform on at the end. But for whatever reason, Huntress in the New 52 sprouts giant purple wings out of her back.
Cool.
And rides a helicopter.
So I'm hoping Grayson is a lot better than this will be.
I feel like it's got
Michael Jannon on it.
This has just got to be one of those situations where whoever was who was doing Nightwing all along just was going to keep doing it after Forever Evil. And at some point they were like, no, 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 you got to wrap it up. We're going to launch a new book.
Agreed.
They probably had it plotted out for like another 10 issues or something. They said, nope, it's over.
End it now. Cut the ripcord.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, right. I've taught enough who would like to mention the book they read.
What I read this week that other people read. How about Batman number 31? Look at all this DC. Batman number 31. So this issue is another chapter in the zero-year storyline. But it seems to be moving towards some sort of conclusion because we finally get the rematch, the rematch between Batman and the Riddler with Lucius Fox and Commissioner Gordon, well, Lieutenant Gordon at this point, I think, working in the background, trying to take the Riddler down and finally release Gotham from his, you know, his riddling grips. But, I thought that the issue is definitely was moving things forward. It's obviously, you know, if you're new to the book, this is a retelling of Batman's origin to a certain extent. So, because it's a tale of Batman's younger days. So, there's some flashbacks involved regarding Batman as a Bruce Wayne as a student and some of his post-traumatic stress from witnessing his parents' death and how that had sort of affected him going forward and dealing with questions and problems, life problems that just needed to be confronted as opposed to running away from them. So, you know, there's definitely some psychology involved here. Snyder is trying to really show how Batman develops some of, I guess, the psychoses that he has. So, you know, it's an interesting read. You definitely cannot read this as, I don't know, I don't want to say you cannot. It's a hard read if you're picking this up for the very first time. If this is your first Batman book, it's definitely going to be hard to decipher. But it's also very good in the sense that that's developing the storyline into one chapter in a much larger story that I think is going to help define, and it's doing its job to help define Batman for a new generation.
When does this end?
There's two more chapters zero year.
Two more? Okay.
Right. Yeah, I really like the issue. I mean, you know what you say, obviously, that you can't just pick this up and start reading from this point. You do have to go back and read the entire thing as far as that goes. But I think the story has been really well laid out. He's definitely made the Riddler someone that you pay attention to.
Sure.
I thought one thing that was interesting is that the whole – points of this issue is that it's all in the sunlight, that it takes place – in the light, and of course, Batman hates the light. He even makes a comment that the sunlight is overrated. But the way the colors were done in this book, because it's daytime, there's a sunlight, because it's the Riddler, who's a colorful character that wears, you know, bright green and everything, the coloring of this book throughout this story was also very bright and very vivid and very colorful, which is something that I didn't really pick up on until I was about three-fourths of the way through, and I was like, you know, how often does coloring stand out like that? But three-fourths of the way through the issue, I was like, you know, the colors are really adding something to this particular issue. I don't know if I just didn't notice it as well in the past, so I need to go back and look. But, you know, I think this is really well-crafted from top to bottom.
Oh, sure. I'd be remiss if I did not mention Capullo's art, which is, you know, leaps and bounds above so much of the art that's out there. You know, there's so much going on that he crafts, you know, his storytelling is spot on in this book.
I think he's actually gotten better as the series has gone along. I think if you go back and look, it's the first like maybe 6 to 10 issues he did. It was kind of uneven. His people all looked identical.
He's finding his way, probably.
Yeah. Once he started really getting into it, really getting, I guess, maybe the practice that he needed of doing it on a regular schedule, and working with so many different characters, that he really started to branch out, really started to, you know, to develop it differently. But yeah, I thought this issue was great.
Nice. I have to make sure I get to it. Okay, how about from you, Roddy?
Yeah, sorry, got caught up in another story.
Make sure to go to the Twitter account News Nerds Need.
Yeah, Steve Ballmer just
bought.
Steve Ballmer just bought the Clippers. That's
what?
Yeah,
or he that's what. Could
Well, no, I'm starting to see stories saying that biz could very well go through. I think it's still got to be approved by the other owners or something. I don't even know why I'm interested in it, because I don't care for football. I mean, for basketball, but it's Ballmer. But anyway.
We just lost Dirt because it's sports.
Right?
Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Hey, you guys are just looking. I had the vlog. I was on mute. A little while ago, people who watched the show on the live YouTube probably caught me pumping my fists and throwing my hands in the air because I just don't care because of another sporting event that's going on.
That's about to say another hockey game.
That's right.
Nice. I caught your celebration earlier.
All righty. So what do you got, Roddy? You can throw out Invaders number 5. You can throw out something.
Yeah, let's do that, because I wanted to know what you thought about that one.
The story, you know, kind of wrapped up a little too neatly for me.
Right.
But I liked the very end, where they did something with Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch character.
Right.
And it actually ties into, I don't know if you read Fantastic Four number 5.
No. Well, see, I thought that was tying into the Secret Avengers stuff. I'm sitting here thinking, like, wait a minute, wasn't he already a part of that?
Well, I don't know, because he left the Secret Avengers stuff because of that stuff that happened in that Android world or whatever that was.
Okay.
That Remender story that I was never crazy about.
Right.
You know, basically. You know, just to deal with that first part of the story with the original Invaders group, the story wrapped up very quickly.
Right.
It was very kind of, you know, ho-hum, nothing too crazy.
I think, yeah, they were just we just needed a story just to kind of get them in, set up stuff, and hopefully they got something. Yeah.
Right. So then, like I said, I like the very last, you know, it's the last, what, four issues, the last four pages were probably the most important things in the book.
Right.
And, you know, it develops the Jim Hammond character and moves things forward. And lo and behold, if you read Fantastic Four number 5 this week, which is, I'm definitely going to mention it when it's my turn to mention a book.
Okay.
He actually plays a small but fairly prominent role, a short role, but a fairly prominent role in that book. So, you know, you could see James Robinson as the writer of both books, you know, definitely tying his two works together in Marvel.
I haven't read it. I feel like I know what it is, but maybe I don't. I have to check that out. But so, yeah, but this is a decent read. Just like 8-7 said, it did kind of just neatly wrap up the storyline, and I'm really looking forward to the next issue because it's a original Sin tie-in.
Right. I'm interested to see Right. I'm interested to see what original Sin pops up, you know, amongst this particular group of characters.
Right.
So
what are you going to say, Tim?
The opening arc in All New Invaders is over now with the Kree.
Yeah. I mean, unless they have, it looks like
there's some more stuff that's going to happen in that too.
Right.
Like I said, the last four pages are pretty big.
Yeah, you know, it's going to seem like it's going to come back up.
Right. It's kind of funny that, you know, of all the books that Marvel's putting out right now, All New Invaders probably has like two of the, you know, well, the one that I was talking about with Jim Hammond is relatively minor, but the one development in this book is like, oh, wait, guess what? You know, I think it's going to come back in a big way at some point.
Okay.
No spoiler. Ding, ding, ding.
Let's see. Dirt, tell us how dark Dirt Spectre was.
Yeah, I can probably do that. Dr. Spectre, Master of the Occult. So basically, what this story is about is Dr. Spectre is this guy who investigates ghosts and vampires and demons and whatever, and he exorcises them he will exorcise them, or he'll point out if someone's like a fraud, mystic, or whatever, and he does it all on his highly rated reality TV show. So he's a bit of an egomaniac. He's of course eccentric, but he lives in this world where all of this stuff, ghosts and vampires and whatever, are real. But then he also filters out the people who are making a bogus living off of it. And the way they've set up the story is they've given him a couple characters around him, and it's basically through the eyes and the actions of those characters that you're seeing who Dr. Spectre is. So it's a book about him that's seen really through the eyes of the people who deal with him, not necessarily through him, which I think adds an interesting layer to the storytelling. It's also the first book from all of these books coming out of Dynamite that references the other titles. So at one point when he's talking to this mystic, she starts talking about a warrior who fights a dinosaur, a rebel fighter who plunges his fist into the oppressor's torso, pulls out sizzling wires, about the sun cremates a living man, replaces his body with itself. Like, she starts having these visions of Turok and of Solar and of Magnus. So for the first time, you're actually starting to get this idea that somehow these books actually are connected, which up until now it seemed impossible that they could be, because they were all different time periods, different places. It just didn't seem like there was any link between them, and this book is providing that link. And there is a bit of a twist at the end. If you read the Valiant series, then you kind of or if you read the Valiant series of Dr. Mirage, which this was kind of loosely based from, is that one of the characters around him becomes a ghost and becomes part of his life. But they did it a little differently this time around with Dr. Spectre. But as far as, they basically took something like an X-Files or, a Hellboy, BPRD, that type of thing, where you're investigating these demons and occult and whatever, and turned it a little more superhero-y without it being too much of a, standard capes type book. But really, I think the idea of the way it's structured, where the character is the focus of the book, but he's not the narrative voice of the book. He's not the key point of the book, which I think really makes it a little more interesting. And it was actually really enjoyable. So far, Magnus was fantastic. I think Spectre is number two, Solar is number three, and Turok I kind of wish they hadn't done.
I saw something. I saw an article, I think last week, saying how Solar, they kind of switched stuff with that. I guess in the second issue or third issue, or probably second, since I think that's the only thing that's come out so far. Did you read the issue two of Solar?
Yeah.
Do you recommend sticking with that?
Yeah, so far. There's not, there are some things that they play upon that are your expectations if you're familiar with the character. So if you haven't read any of the Solar stuff, then some of the stuff that happens doesn't have as much of a meaning, I think. But it's still, I think, a pretty well-crafted story. If you're coming into it new and fresh, it's not a twist for you, some of the things that happen, but it's still interesting what's going on.
Okay. I may jump back in and give it another try.
It is one of those where the first issue leaves you more questions than answers, and the second one really helps kind of clean everything up and put it together. It's almost as if one and two are kind of like a double-sized first issue. At the end of the second issue, you're a lot better off than you are at the end of the first issue. You know, kind of like the pilot of a TV show being cut into the first and second episode, that type of feeling, where at the end of the second episode, second issue, it feels more of a wrap than at the end of the first one.
Got it. Okay.
Here, I'll pull out one. Mighty Avengers number 10. So this is basically starting the original Sin tie-in. Yeah, the original Sin tie-in. It's not the stuff, well, I guess they hadn't started with the stuff that you may or may not have heard about in the past couple of months that's going into it, but this is basically saying getting the team up to speed about what's going on just basically letting people know, I mean, letting the team know that, hey, Watu's dead, and starting off that ball rolling, and they're fighting mindless ones while Blade is off fighting some werechickens. Yeah. And apparently because that whole part right there was kind of crazy. It was like, you sent where chickens, where rhinoceroses, where snakes, where this and that other. And I guess one of those was in Deadpool 27, apparently.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
What? I mean,
that Blade is fighting where chickens.
I have no idea where that's going. I mean, I know he has some talisman that somebody wants, so they've been sending people after him. I mean, and I don't know if this is just the people right now. I mean, apparently, well, spoiler, they kind of got to him. So.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an out there type of thing. So is it an out there type of thing that's interesting, or an out there type of thing that just kind of makes you shake your head and move on?
Yes. Because, I mean, because it's slightly interesting because, you know, where is this going in relation to this book, which I'm not, which I guess it's going to tie back into the rest of the team at some point, maybe after Original Sin. I don't know. But just for the fact that it's being there and they're like, where chickens, because there's even a little blurb in there. It's like when you first see Blade, it's like they do the, you know, Blade, and of course they do the little one line about him under that. And then they go on to say he's fighting, you know, were chickens. And then somewhere on this page it says, you're welcome.
I will say Al Ewan has been creative.
Yeah.
In here and in the Loki book. He's very witty.
Yeah. Yeah, and that comes out. But that part is just kind of, at this point, it seems like it's kind of throwaway, but like I said, it'll probably tie back into the rest of the book because it kind of goes from that to the part that goes actually into Original Sin, or that ties into Original Sin, where Luke Cage is, and everybody else is fighting Mindless Ones, like I said. And a very interesting recall to Next Wave. By
wow, that's cool. I got to read this now.
Yeah, like it's basically just Monica Rambeau saying something when she comes in. A couple of things, actually. One I don't know too much about, but that part was like, all right, so they're basically saying this is canon. All right, this is, or maybe not, depending on what, you know, if you read into what she's saying.
I was under the impression that Next Wave was canon for the most part.
Well, this kind of, yeah. And
because, like, you know, they referenced that, you know, that's where, that's part of where, what is she calling herself now?
Spectrum.
Spectrum. I wanted to call her Photon.
Yeah.
Where she's been, you know, in the past few years. So, I, you know, that's my understanding, is that it is canon.
Yeah. Because, like, she even makes mention to her changing names and changing teams and this and that and the other, and until... And then the next line, she's like, if they're bringing up Next Wave. So,
right.
Had a screen cap of that, but I wasn't going to show it right now. But it was a pretty good read. It's, I guess this is the bigger part about this. Blue Marvel's on the cover. There is something, he goes to the moon after finding out, because apparently he was not unaware, and if anybody who's been following the book, he's pretty much aware of everything because he's watching everything in the universe or on Earth. but he did not know about that. And he and the Watcher were real good friends, so he goes to the moon to pay his respects. And apparently, the Watcher's wife, who, if you've read, what, FF?
Okay.
Yeah. Comes in, who summoned Adam. And then they talk, and then something happens at the end that at first I thought was indicative of something else. It's like, wait a minute, what's this about? And then it's not, it's innocuous, basically. But it starts Adam being more involved in that.
I'm glad to see the Blue Marvel being integrated into the Marvel Universe more. This is a good thing.
Yeah, I still need to go back and read that.
Miniseries. It's not bad.
Yeah, I heard.
So, all right, how about I throw something out there, because I've been wanting to rant about this particular issue as soon as I read it. It's Fantastic Four number 5. So, speaking
of... This is a rant.
Yeah, this is a rant. So,
a lot of ranting this episode.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny that there's that Bleeding Cool article that kind of sparked our conversation. And, you know, I hadn't read that. I don't know if it had been published yet when I had read Fantastic Four number 5. But I remember putting this book down and saying to myself, what the heck? You know, it's, you know, James Robinson is doing his best, you know, I guess, deconstruct to reconstruct type story. And this book basically is a retelling of the Fantastic Four's origin and their history in the context of a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit against the FF for basically, you know, being negligent and having, you know, multiple weapons of mass destruction and portals to different worlds in the Baxter Building. And, you know, and people who have been injured by the FF's actions, either intentionally or unintentionally or negligently. Yeah, that's the lawyer in me talking, right? People bringing suit as a class. And I was reading this, and I don't know if James Robinson is a practicing attorney or what kind of experience he has, but I was definitely, you know, if I hadn't read a slimy lawyer portrayal in a comic book, this is the one that I would probably put up front in terms of, you know, effective, you know, an effective portrayal of maybe not the slimiest lawyer, but definitely an effective advocate for, you know, an advocate for a position that, you know, while legally correct, is probably morally incorrect.
So basically accurate of every lawyer.
Exactly. But I'm
okay, so it was accurate. I was wondering if it was accurate or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly accurate, but I, you know, even I, even when I was reading it, I was just like, yeah, I'm giving up my law license. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. But, yeah, I, you know, like it was a pretty effective portrayal. It made me hate lawyers. Not, you know, even more so than I already do. And, you know, it's kind of funny that way. It may be, you know, if anything, it kind of pushes the story forward. I'm not a fan of the deconstruct and reconstruct because it's just another trope for relaunching a book or, you know, like finding a new, all different direction for a team, for a character or a team of characters. But, you know, the way they're doing this one, it's kind of a weird, you know, I don't know how we got from issue 1 to issue 5, which is kind of bad.
They weren't deconstructed during Hickman's run?
Well, they were, but, you know, like I said, it's a trope. It's something that they all, that every writer kind of does to reinvigorate a comic. So, you know, the point is, I don't recall, maybe it's just because I maybe missed an issue, but I don't know exactly how to put 1 through 5 all together. There's nothing cohesive about how we got from issue 1 to issue 5, and I'm not a fan of that, so... You know, unlike Robinson's work on New Invaders, which, you know, the storyline, you know, wrapped up very neatly, but you could see the beginning, the middle, the end, and, you know, development towards new storylines. Whereas in this one, in these first 5 issues, I'm sort of lost as to where, you know, they're intending to go.
So I've listened to some interviews with James Robinson. I don't think he's a lawyer, but I don't think, or either that's never come about. But I think he's kind of one of those ones like he may have he has a long plan for it, because I've never read like Starman or Earth 2 that he was on.
Right, I agree with you that those are definitely long form stories.
Yeah, and sounds like that might be. We may not know, you know, how that's going to play out, but he sounds like, from what he was talking about this book, he may have a similar plan with this book.
Right, but you know what's funny about it is that, at least with the Hickman Mumbo Jumbo and FF, there were still, you know, elements of FF in it. Right now, there's very few elements of FF, you know, like classic FF stories in it, and that's kind of frustrating.
Hmm.
You know, but it's well. I know. I thought it was well written. I would say read it because it gives you a quick recap of FF history and gives you some courtroom drama to boot. You know, so it's a rant only in the sense that it made me hate lawyers.
So if you already hate lawyers, then you don't need to read this, or
no? If you already hate lawyers, it'll get some more ammo.
Oh, okay. All right then.
I'm gonna quickly bring up Guardians of the Galaxy number 15.
Oh, good, because I wanted to also.
And I'll just say that cover's deceiving.
Yep. Speaking of bleeding cool articles.
Put up the cover.
What's wrong?
There it is.
The cover just says, "And now Captain Marvel." So obviously this issue is going to be them meeting with Captain Marvel or doing something with Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel is going to be a key figure in this issue.
Oh, sure.
That's especially since last issue ended with her coming in on the final page.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a Thanos?
Yeah. Bendis did. I did see something a little while ago about Bendis apologizing for and gave a reason for why that is the case that it is. But, okay. The cover is still misleading. But anyway, it was a good book. The Guardians are not in a good way at this point because of being separated and sold off, whatever you want to call it. So, but it was easy to read. It's just that don't go into this book expecting that cover to be what's in it.
Yeah. So Bendis, I guess, gave a post or something apologizing for. Yeah. He decided at last minute to take Captain Marvel out of this series because he thought it would be better with the doom and gloom of how would the Guardians survive.
And he's pretty much right.
Yeah, but. I mean, we kind of know how they'll survive because obviously she's going to come in and try to save the day.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the issue was fine. I actually forgot that she was on the cover until like maybe the next day. I went back and looked at it. I was like, wait a minute. That's not right. So yeah. Nick Bradshaw, I'm still not crazy about his art. That's only other thing I'll add to it. I know he's a all new young gun, but meh.
Oh, he's a part of that? Okay. Oh.
Yeah. And he's only doing like I guess this arc and then who's the artist coming on after him? Because of course Guardians can't keep an artist. I guess that's every Marvel book nowadays though. I forget who's doing. Is it Chris Anka? That doesn't sound right. I want to say it's another.
That'd be cool.
It's another good artist that's coming on after him.
I mean, that's a sign of, you know, a book that people want to get on. But, you know, the fact that they can't keep someone for a long run is, you know, more indicative of the way, you know, I guess the demands of getting these books out on time is. They're putting more of a premium on that as opposed to keeping, you know, someone on for the long run.
Yeah, plus it'd probably be a bigger deal if Bendis stopped writing the book, I would imagine.
Right. You know, as long as they're keeping someone on that is kind of a name artist and has a recognizable or at least a compatible style, we'll put it that way, then, you know, it's not that big of a deal, right?
And speaking of other, I guess, comic booky news for another book that came out from Marvel this week, Inhuman number 2. So Inhuman number 3 will come out in July, in 5 weeks, I think they said.
Okay.
No reason why, but I think it actually is. Well, actually, is it number four? I think it's number four. I think it's the first issue Ryan Stegman does is push back 5 weeks. As for this book, it was fine. I like Joe Madureira's art. Joe Mad. He illustrates a very stoic Captain America. And I like Corgan's portrayal by Charles Soule. He reminded me of Kilowog. That's sort of like the instructor of the
Inhumans. What is it? Did he call anyone a poozer?
No. Unless you count the new humans as new humans.
Which that came up. But
that's, yeah, I saw that article.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna come in as well.
I don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it be. If that was the case, they called the book New Humans.
Yeah.
Maybe that'd be the spinoff book, New Humans.
Yeah, right, imagine.
Yeah, or if they, just like Darker said, I saw said, it was like, make that into a movie. I mean, or, you know, I guess.
Human as a name is fine.
Yeah. But outside of, is this worth reading? Because this is another one I keep forgetting is a slow around.
If you want to get on the ground floor of the next big Marvel franchise that's going to push the X-Men to the children's table at Thanksgiving.
Are you reading copy over there? What's going on here?
Yes. Well, hey, then I got to support this book then. I better start reading it.
No.
That's fine.
Then, yes, you do want to read this because eventually once they get their schedule and stuff out the way, I assume that the book's going to get better. I mean, as of right now, nothing's happened because we've only had 2 issues since Infinity came out, and that was, what, last fall? It almost has been a year.
Like, this book's been coming out every 2 months or something?
Well, it got delayed initially. Because that switched
right. It's roughly, I was going to say, it's roughly on time right now. So, you know, they're only delaying the first issue that Stegman is doing for a couple of weeks, right? Or for like a week.
Hey, man, they finished Forever Evil. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, but it took a while.
Oh, mercy.
But I assume Inhuman, basically. Look at what they've done with the Guardians, and that's they're probably going to mirror Inhuman after Guardians. It'll be the one book, and then whenever the movie Inhuman movie is announced, as we get closer to, I guess, its release date, you'll start to see spinoff books like Dante will get his own book, I'm assuming, and Black Bolt will get one, and whoever else. Yay. And you'll see big name creators attached to it. All these spinoffs, or maybe not, because Guardians doesn't really have. I guess Scotty Young counts as a big name creator. I'm rambling now.
That's fine. Hey, Avengers 30.
Yeah, I read that. Some time travel Hickman mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, I'm slightly disappointed. I don't think I was here when y'all did went over 29, or if I was, I'm totally blanking out on it, which blame age or something. I don't know. So basically they went forth in time. Thanks to the time gem, the Infinity time gem coming back into play, which this is why I'm disappointed because I really didn't think it was going to come back like this in this way. But hey, if you're going to do it, that's would be the way to do it, I guess. So Avengers in the future still fighting Iron Man and his other suits, I guess.
You know, there's like the Cyclops to his right T-shirts. They need like T-shirts to say it's all Iron Man's fault.
Right.
Blame Iron Man for everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
I do like the Hickman mumbo jumbo is finally coming to a head.
Oh yeah, like it's getting some it's picking up some steam and it's going places. So I've been enjoying it for that anyway. And the nice little Pizza Doll reference in the middle of the book. I just have to call it out real quick.
Yes.
I have to reread that because I don't know if I remember
it's
that.
It's there. It's not. It doesn't say pizza, but it does mention them. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's something about a dog, right?
That's right.
Hawkeye basically asks if he gets his dog, if he gets his dog back, which I find that funny. It would be the one question he asks.
Yeah, I don't even read Hawkeye anymore, so I don't even know what's going on in that.
Well, because it hasn't come out in forever.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's kind of...
You know, that's why I stopped reading it.
You know? I mean, you can probably read it when it comes out, but it's hard to remember what happened.
I'm too issue. I didn't read that
till it's out. Issue.
The Chris Eliopoulos, whatever his name is, issue. I didn't read that one.
Eliopoulos.
Tony was right.
Tony was right. Never forget it. Tony was right.
That's funny.
Well, I guess we will finally see about that.
We'll see in the future.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I'm still on board with the storyline. It's just that this issue is kind of, you know, lots of time travel mumbo jumbo, and I'm like, hurry up already. I'm sick of it. I know it's a trope. It's a time travel has gotten so much play that I'm just sort of worn out by it. So
are you having Age of Ultron flashbacks?
Kind of, but it's how much time travel can we deal with? You know what I mean? It's like, I kind of miss, you know, just, you know, simpler times, you know, being teleported to Battle World or like in Secret Wars, you know what I mean?
Well, and yeah, I guess in a way, there'll be another book that might come up in the course of this conversation that might further that question.
Although, haven't they really been kind of following that same time travel storyline ever since Avengers rebooted? I mean, didn't you have the time travel and the giant chalkboard that listed?
It's come up. Yeah, it's come up a few different times.
Not even this.
That was a Hickman thing, though.
That was the last Avengers.
That was a Bendis thing, with the chalkboard. He does that in all new X-Men, too.
Yeah, not in this Avengers series, but the Avengers series that came before this. Yeah. Was when they had the big chalkboard, because it talked about Age of Ultron, it talked about Secret Invasion, it talked about the Heroic Age, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but they've been making call, you know, time recalls every now and then, because that was when, which I guess leading up to now, you know, sowing the seeds, as they say. So it's been coming up here and there. But yeah, like I said, this book was I don't know what I was gonna say about this book.
You were gonna say that Tony was right.
They jumped into another time period at the end.
They did, yeah.
So basically, where did you get that image from? Tony was right.
Back during Civil War. Okay. I forget who it was. One of the guys at Marvel. I forget who it was, but he actually like tweeted it out on his Twitter account. And everybody just started downloading it and printing it on T-shirts.
They're doing Redbubble stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, except this one was authorized. You were okay to do whatever you wanted with it.
That's funny. All right. How about, I don't know who else, Red Cowl number one from Image?
I avoided Cowl number one.
Really?
And I've read that and reviewed it along with a couple of the other comics we've talked about tonight. So go read those reviews on thepopculturenetwork.com and theclicknation.com.
Woohoo!
I was like, yeah, I'm not writing full reviews for all these comics I read. I'm just going to say a couple of things. So I had my rapid reviews.
There you go.
But continue.
How was it? Yeah.
I liked it. I thought it was a good setup. It's set in, 1950s Chicago? And
1960s, yeah.
1960s Chicago. And, you know, it's basically, I guess, superhumans working for, you know, working under the auspices of the government. I read this very quickly on the way home. I didn't have a chance to take notes or really take down, because they do a very good job on the first page of setting up who's who, but I skimmed over that just to get to the book.
There's so many characters, it's hard to remember who is
right.
Who.
you know, like, and unfortunately involves, there's a command structure in place. And sometimes it's hard to, you know, recall that when you're reading it, like, oh, this person is in charge of this, this, and this. So, you know, I liked it as a good setup for the story. I'd be willing to give it another shot in an issue number two.
I thought it was fine. It's nothing I'll probably keep up with. All the promotional images from Rod Rice, I was kind of excited for.
Right.
But then when I got into the actual issue, it was kind of like, maybe it was the coloring. Everything, it was a lot of dark colors and shadows. It kind of distorted, at least for me, what was going on. I guess he uses a painted style too. And he might have done the colors on this too, Rod Rice, who is mostly known for inking a lot of the DC books. But so yeah, it was hard to distinguish some characters from others. And the first page that explained who was who was, you know, nice. But then once you get past that first page, you know, you're not going to go back and, like, look to see who is who. So trying to keep up with all the different characters was kind of hard.
I agree with that. Like I said, it was kind of, you know, I wanted to get to the store and I skimmed over that who's who. It almost felt like I needed to flip back to that who's who to figure out what was going on. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't offensive. It's, like I said, it's probably nothing I'll be keeping up with on whatever schedule it comes out on.
Gotcha. I didn't mind it. I thought it was interesting enough for me to read the second issue, so I'll give it that.
What about Trees, number one?
Didn't read that. Anybody?
Bueller? Yep.
I read it. It's the newest hot book from Warren Ellis, so people will love it, of course. I do enjoy Jason Howard from Super Dinosaur fame. Art is nice. Basically, the setup is aliens come down. They implant these tubes into the Earth, which are called, we humans call them trees. And that's it. Everyone's waiting. You know, when it first happens, people are waiting for the invasion to start. But, you know, like big, you know, blue or green aliens to come out of these structures. But that never happens. So basically, the citizens just learn to adapt to having these structures in the ground and all the pollution that happens from it. And it's kind of like a science experiment of, you know, how will humans react to having humans or having aliens in our presence, but not really in our presence.
Okay.
Art's nice. Again, probably nothing. Probably nothing I'll keep up with again.
Yeah, it's not enough. There's not enough there for you to want to pick up the next issue. It
really sounds like one of those, like, second year art student needs a project, you know. So I don't know. Just these, I'll put tubes in the earth and see how people think about it. That's my comic.
It'll be what's the word? I want to use these big words. It'll be a sociological study of the human mind. I can see, like, Comics Beat or something like that, having that be like the, you know, in the quotation marks in the back pages of whatever, issue 3. IGN said, this is a sociological study of the human brain.
Another must read by Warren Ellis.
Mercy.
There you go. You know it's gonna be on the trade sleeve.
The trade dress, yeah.
Another Warren Ellis hit.
That's funny.
All right, here's one. Another small press book that's worth talking about is Thaniel number 3 came out this week.
Yes.
From our buddies at Awesome Comics. The story actually takes quite a turn in this issue. And I don't really know how much I can actually discuss without kind of giving away spoilers or some of the key points. But basically, I'm gonna try to be as general as I can, not to give too much away, but basically, Faniel you know, he's got this skull on his chest with the scythes or sickles or whatever. So you know that he's somehow connected to the Grim Reaper. You know, somehow he's connected to the to death and destruction and whatever. And he's got these funky powers. And you basically find out in this issue why he got them. You find out who gave them to him. And you kind of... you see that he's put into a very difficult position where he's going to have to use his powers to solve a problem in the worst way possible because it's the only way out. And that's all I can say without really giving anything away. But, I mean, the artwork is still... I kind of expect it, honestly, when you've got a small press comic... They spend a lot of time on the first couple issues, and then everything seems to kind of get rushed as it goes along because they've got that, you know, schedule to keep up with. And a lot of times these are guys that haven't had that weekly or that monthly book that they've had to keep up the schedule with. And the artwork never falls apart in this one. It is still the same quality that you've gotten before, where these the figures almost look like 3D models to a certain degree. You still have the Blood-O-Rama. But you find out, actually, in this one, before this issue, the only time – it was all black and white. The only time you had a spot of color was the red blood. And that kind of made sense because you've got this, you know, Angel of Death type character. However, I noticed in this issue there is another item – there's another thing that pops out that it is colored red as well, which I'm assuming is going to be symbolism for something that's going to come in a future issue. So, again, I'm trying not to, you know, blurt it out or get into it or whatever. But as far as what happens in this particular issue, he is put into this terrible position. And he doesn't want these powers. He doesn't want to be this person, but he's going to have to use them. He's going to have to become something he doesn't want to become. And, you know, the story is continuing to be very intriguing. So I am enjoying it. It is one of those where it gets into a kind of heavy conversation about life and death and the soul and God and, you know, all of these type of things. So it does get a little thick. In the middle, but at the same time that that's happening, there's police cars being picked up and thrown around. There's him learning about these tendrils that come out of his body and can, you know, do different things and whatever. So it's like you have this action kind of offsetting this dialogue. So it doesn't get weighed down as much as you would expect from some of this long exposition that's happening in the middle of the story. So I got to give him kudos for it. It's another very intriguing, well done issue, and it does have at the end of the book there is the teaser preview, the first five pages of Monomyth, the new book that's also coming out from Awesome in the back there. So if you're interested in Monomyth, of course you want to check that out. But Thaniel has it's defied expectations. It's been a lot of fun and a very good read the entire time.
Excellent.
So these guys weren't just, you know, joking around. I mean, they actually put some thought and some work into this thing. It's amazing.
It's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Support the guys.
All right, so what's next?
Real quick, I'll bring up Uncanny Avengers 20. Apparently, they're still trucking along with this Earth's Dead, the mutants. They're on a mutant world, heavy
heads.
Yeah, basically. Planet. I mean, folks, now you got me saying that. Thinking about that. So they had this plan with Kano. What the hell am I thinking? Kang's crew and Havoc got this plan together to write everything that led up to this. So that plan's still going. And they may be trying to bring this on home. I mean, this is basically one big fight issue with, you know, a little touching moment between Scott and Havoc. So, still going, still decent.
I will say that it looks like the Planet X portion of it is over.
Yeah, it seems like they're bringing that home.
So, Of course, there's time travel involved, just to let you know.
Yep.
Hey.
I'm not down with the time travels. It's slowly getting to me.
You don't have a successful Marvel comic book if you don't have time travel in it right now.
Why do you hate Marty McFly so much?
Or Doctor Who?
Yeah, don't you see Doc is gonna be in 100,000 Ways to Die in the West, whatever that awful movie is called.
Oh, Doc Brown.
Calling the Giant.
Yeah, Doc Brown.
Oh. Whoa.
Yeah. He makes a cameo in the trailer. So I don't know if he plays any kind of role in the movie, but he definitely makes a cameo in the trailer.
Supposedly, I heard also off topic that if you've seen all the commercials for that movie, you've seen all the good jokes already.
I'm sure. It was pretty much the same thing with Ted.
I actually like Ted, though. Maybe it's because it was an animated creature doing all the jokes.
Peter Griffin as the bear? Yeah.
I'm done with all the books I've read.
Let me see if there's anything else I have. I read Aquaman number 31, man. Not happy with that. You know, it's sort of a filler issue. Aquaman stuff is a filler issue.
Isn't Swamp Thing in it?
Yeah, it's just not. It wasn't very good. The Swamp. I like the Mira stuff better, to be perfectly honest.
So I made the good choice and stopped reading that book.
It felt like it may be
building towards something, like he's going somewhere, he's just not there yet.
Right.
They're building something.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely better than the last two issues where he was fighting Hercules.
Oh, yeah. God, you can only go up from there.
Has Wonder Woman guest starred already?
No.
I saw her at the end of one of the issues. Okay.
No.
Did they pull a Captain Marvel?
No.
Because, at the end of the thing where he fought Hercules, didn't she appear at the final page?
Oh, maybe she did. I don't remember. I have to go back and look.
Forget y'all. No.
If she did, that wasn't leading to anything.
Right. It might have been just a short cameo to explain, hey, guess what? Hercules is back, sort of.
She's like, okay, now I'm here to take care of Hercules. And he's like, yeah, it's already done.
Okay.
I did read Secret Origins number 2.
I skimmed this. So, I wanted to talk about the Starfire story.
Well,
are you still excited for this series?
Actually, this was, I felt, better than the first issue. And, it's rotating writers doing different characters, so
right.
you're never quite sure what you're going to get. I thought the Batman...
box of chocolates.
Yeah. Oh. It's hard, like, they recap Batman's origin, and it's hard to, you've read that a million times before.
I skipped over that.
And because it's funny, because the story, actually, at one point, it references that we all know the story. It's like you've heard the story before, so it's like, okay, well, why are we reading it again then? And there are a few subtle differences between the new 52 Batman and the previous incarnations of Batman, the way he interacted with the Red Hood, who Joker was, that was different. Of course, the technology his dad had of the bats in the cave, he had that orb that could record 360 video, and that came back. That's why he thinks of bats, whatever. But it retells the story for the purpose of kind of giving voice to the city, like it's the city of Gotham, kind of talking about this boy and kind of it like a group think. If all the citizens were to sit down and think of how would you tell this story, like this is the way they see it, that the citizens of Gotham see Batman, of course, not as a monster, not as something to be feared, but as a symbol of hope, which is something that you don't normally think of when you associate Batman, because you always think of from the criminal's point of view. He is there to scare the criminals, to defeat them, to beat them up, to make them not want to be criminals anymore. But of course, the flip side is that the average person who sees Batman, of course, sees him as a symbol of hope and a symbol of redemption and a symbol of that the city is worth saving and worth working for. So I thought the way that they took the familiar story and kind of twisted it to give you a different outlook on it was at least an interesting way of telling you something that you've already heard before, but giving it a new voice. So that is at least something good that they did, even though they were telling you something that you already knew. The second story, there's actually three stories in here. The second story is all about Aquaman, and this one actually fills in some of the details that we haven't had in the New 52. Aquaman's origin over the years in DC Comics has shifted, like about every, I don't know, 5-10 years, they played with his origin and who he was and where he came from and who his dad was and, you know, the relationship with his mom and everything like that has always changed. It's always been somewhat fluid in the DC universe, just kind of depending on who was writing him. And so this time they sat down and they hammered out his origin in the New 52, and you've got glimpses of these things that you've seen in the regular comic that have come up from time to time with the doctors.
Especially from the whatchamacallit, remember the high school reunion issue?
Right, where it talks about his friends that he had and all of that. This goes back and tells his story basically of how he became public, how everybody found out that he was different, and how his father died, how Black Manta became his arch enemy, how he found his way back to Atlantis. So it recaps stuff that we have seen in the series, but then it also fills in a lot of the holes that we didn't know. So for me, this was the story worth getting for this book, because this is what I felt the stories at the beginning of the New 52 should have been. You know, telling about his youth and telling how he became who he was. This is all the stuff that they skipped at the beginning of the New 52. So now that they're going back and giving us these details, I was really interested in reading that. And so then, of course, the Starfire story does the same thing, where you don't really know a lot about her in the New 52, other than that at the beginning of Red Hood and the Outlaw, she's a slut, and you find out later she's only a slut because she's trying to keep away from having deep human interactions.
Right.
And so this actually goes back and tells her life story, starting when she's very young, and her life as the princess on this planet, and how the Dominators come in and take over the planet and kill everyone she knows and throws her into slavery, and how she develops her powers and how she breaks free. And
right. They throw some Wildstorm in there.
Yeah, yeah. So there's actually a lot of background stuff, again, with her that you never knew before, that you never got. And I think they did a really good job of making the character back into someone that you kind of care about, because at the beginning of Red Hood and the Outlaws, you don't care about the character because of what they did to her. But now they're at a point where they're going back and they're telling her story, and now you do care about her again.
I'm glad you put it that way, because, you know, as I'm always fond of saying, I go back to pre-crisis New Teen Titans when Starfire was first introduced. And she was one of the better New Teen Titans characters, you know, one of the fan favorites, obviously for some obvious reason. But, you know, one of which was, you know, George Perez and his art and how he drew her. You know, and I was very disappointed to hear that Starfire had been characterized as such in the new the Red Hood and the Outlaws book in the New 52. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that, as someone tries to call somebody.
That's not my side. I'll be back.
It's cool. I was about to say, I'm just glad to hear that, you know, that this is actually a story that needed to be told. You know, this was the origin that kind of needed to be established for Starfire to make her a legitimate character again, and not just some sort of caricature, like a sex pot alien.
Right. And they, to be fair, in Red Hood and the Outlaws, they brought in a different writer at some point, and he's the one who kind of went back and explained why she'd been acting that way. And so then this book is kind of an attempt to take those two halves and kind of redeem them you know, together. You don't get, like, this story ends before she ever starts anything with Red Hood and the Outlaws. So it never gets to any of that stuff that you saw at the beginning of the New 52. But it does kind of give that justification to the character where why she would want to disassociate herself from everyone around her because of all the terrible things that she had gone through, the way she had been treated, and what had happened to her family and her home planet, you know? So it at least tries to justify what we had to endure at the beginning of Red Hood.
Right.
Sorry to divert course, but the New York Rangers just won the Eastern Conference Championship and are going to be playing for the Stanley Cup. Let's go, Rangers. Thank you very much. Now back to our regularly scheduled program.
The only thing I was going to say is that
and for all you people who are faithfully watching the show online, you can just watch me pump my arms because I am dutifully not putting on the audio.
I saw the breaking news thing. I was like, yep, I see. I see where you were at this.
It's like, but, you can see my eyes sort of diverted. I was like, yeah, I'm listening, guys.
But all I was going to say was that going back to the Gotham thing, it's funny that you mentioned that about the dirt about the Gotham being the voice of that particular story, because this cover seems like that's going to be a poster for Gotham to me.
Oh, the TV show?
Yeah. So that stole
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that connection, but yeah, that kind of makes sense. Because one of the things it talks about in the story is that, you know, Bruce Wayne's parents, obviously they were well known by everybody in Gotham. His dad was a prominent doctor. His mom worked with several charities and whatever. And for them being murdered, they did kind of a reflection of the JFK funeral, where you saw little Bobby, little kid by the side of the road, and he salutes his dad's coffin as it went by. That was like a big historical moment,
right,
you know, for the United States. Well, in Gotham, it was the image of Bruce Wayne on TV, the little boy sitting there, and he was glassy-eyed. His face was blank. He had kind of a hard stare to him. So it was like a completely different demeanor in that situation. And so that's kind of the difference between, you know, Gotham City and the rest of the world. The rest of the world may have this kind of bright, hopeful outlook, but in Gotham City for so long, it was just dark and depressing and, you know, malignant. And so now when Batman comes along, Batman in any other city would be a villain, but Batman in Gotham City is the hero. And it's like, he's the hero that city needs.
Yeah.
So even if it's one of those things, you know, you've heard the story before, you've heard it 1,000 times, of course you know who Batman is and whatever, it was still, it felt to me like that was one of those stories that was probably written for the Detective Comics 27 anniversary issue. And they probably said, oh, wait, let's hold on to this and put it in Secret Origins, because it is just, it's one of those perfect, like, wraps a bow on the story type thing.
Right. Cool.
All right, Tim's still not back, so we got to talk about more comics.
What? No more hockey? What?
I can talk about all the books I haven't read yet that I want to get to this weekend.
Go for it.
All right, let's see. Transformers. Haven't had a chance to read this yet, but I want to. I love what they've been doing with the series, the way they've been playing with the characters and actually changing the universe. 24, Underground. Has anybody been watching the new series?
No, like, but yeah.
It is fantastic.
Great.
And of course, Kiefer Sutherland, because he lives such a hard life in real life, in 24, it's been, you know, 4 years or whatever, but it looks like 10 because he looks so much older. And it fits perfectly with the story that's going on in the 24 show. This is the series that kind of bridges the old 24 in the new series, so it covers that ground. So I'm really excited for this because the new series is living up to expectations instead of being a letdown.
Cool. Shout out to Classic Material as another 24 podcast.
Yes, shout out.
Let's see. We've got Star Trek, which I wanted to read. I haven't had a chance to get to yet. I love the new Abrams universe, so it's a good series. Haven't had a chance to read it, though. Ghostbusters has been doing a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah.
This has really been a good series, and this is one of those books where even if you haven't been reading it, this is an anniversary year. It's the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters. If you haven't read the series, like, at all, but you've, you know, maybe watched the cartoon, you've seen the movies, this current storyline, Mass Hysteria, this is the fourth part. If you just go back and read those four parts, you're going to get an entertaining story that I think will, you know, hold up on its own. There's going to be some characters you don't know, but it does a pretty good job of keeping you up to speed and everything. So that's what it was put together for. So I think everybody can pretty much enjoy that one. It doesn't matter how well you know it or not. Is Tim back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were killing time till you got back.
No, we were talking hockey, man. Rangers win. Houston Conference Final. Right. We're playing for the cup.
Okay.
That's awesome. No, we were actually talking about books that we wanted to read that we didn't get to this week.
Okay, I'll name a couple.
Okay.
Quickly, some of the stuff from Image. Dead Body Road, number 6, was the finale of that limited series from Justin Jordan and Matteo Scalera. Deadly Class from Rick Remender. Scroll. I ain't get a chance to look at Ms. Marvel number 4 yet.
Same.
I was going to bring that up, but...
Yeah. The Flash 31...
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read that yet, and I really wanted to.
Thanos Annual, I haven't heard anything about that.
I don't know if I feel like
reading it or not. You did?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I'll probably just read it just for, you know, academic review purposes, but, you know, I didn't hear good things about it.
Thunderbolts 26 is Charles Soule's last issue as writer.
Okay.
And you know, actually, I will say that the past... I don't know, maybe 4 months of Thunderbolts. I have kind of been skimming through it. And I have liked the artwork with the story. And I was thinking about sitting down and actually getting into the series. And then I heard he was leaving. And I was like, oh, man, okay, well, maybe not.
I'd recommend reading the, I think it's 3 issues where Ghost Rider joins the team. Just read those. Those are fun.
Okay. All right. So we already mentioned a couple of books that I still want to read. Let me just hit up Marvel because I actually didn't get to some of the books I wanted to read. Guardians of the Galaxy I didn't get to read. Inhuman didn't get to read. Mighty Avengers I didn't get to read. Ms. Marvel.
Did anybody read Winter Soldier?
No, I wanted to read that. And Uncanny Avengers number 20. So there's a bunch of Marvel books I did not get to read this weekend.
Yeah, I have, let's see, Thanos Annual number 1, so I have no idea what that's going to be. I guess I need to go back, but I will read Iron Patriot number 3. I think that's all I can think about right now. I did have one that was kind of a throwback that I did, well, not so much of a throwback because it's not that old of a story, but I kind of wanted to go back and read Battle of the Atom and Schism for some reason. Well, not for some reason, because it's just a whatever led up to Battle of the Atom, so which means it had to go through all new, the run till now, the all new. And that was another old one that I kind of wanted to read, but I'm drawing a blank right now.
Actually, I did read one other book here. Rover Red Charlie number 6 came out this week. This is from Garth Ennis, and this was the final issue of this series. And actually, I hadn't read this series until this weekend when we were driving to Chicago. I put all of these on my tablet and read them in the van on the way up, and while driving, you know, obviously. And the story is basically about the end of the world. All the humans freak out and go nuts and just start killing each other and jumping out of buildings and setting stuff on fire, almost kind of like Crossed, except they're not, you know, they're not being evil in that sense. They're just kind of unhinged from reality. And so the story is of these dogs, the dogs communicating with each other, trying to figure out what's going wrong with the humans and trying to, you know, get safe. And it's like a different take on the kind of the zombie genre, where the humans are going crazy, and so the dogs are the normal ones. And the dogs have their own structure, and they have their own language talking to each other, and they have their own, you know, customs, and they're just trying to find safety, and they're trying to travel to a place where they don't have to worry about, you know, everything else that's going on in the world. And it really is an interesting take on the idea of that survival horror story, because you're not dealing with humans. So they do think of things differently. They do talk about things differently, and the way they view the world. And one of the characters always wants every other dog to sniff his butt, make sure everything's okay. You know, take a sniff, like, you know, just he meets someone new. It's like, hey, nice to meet you. Take a sniff back there. Let me know what you think, you know, because that's what dogs do. You know?
Wait a second. Wait a second.
Oh, man.
There you go. I just had to I was just having a second, you know, just putting a second aside to process that before I hit this sound effect.
But it was a lot of fun. I don't know if you guys remember, there was a story from, I think it was Grant Morrison, about 8 years ago called We Three, about animals that were part of a government experiment that became intelligent and broke out and were trying to get to freedom. And right. This, in many ways, is similar to that. It feels almost like a companion piece to that.
Okay.
So if you enjoyed We Three, then definitely check out Rover Red Charlie. This is from Avatar, but it's still pretty good anyway.
Okay. Cool.
Okay,
all
right. So quits of the week.
All right, let's see.
Yeah, I'll do mine. My click of the week is Ms. Marvel number 4, because you should all buy it and get the sales up so my picks will go up. That's right.
Ulterior motives.
Damn right. But outside of that, I mean, it was a pretty good read. It's still kind of the beginning arc where Kamala's still kind of getting used to her powers and finding out about them, but now it's starting to go into, I guess, a new story.
No, that was a mistake.
I was going to say,
what the hell am I laughing at? I was pressing the wrong mouse. Sorry. Missed
okay.
Time.
My click of the week is Uncanny Avengers number 20.
Nice. Did not read that yet.
I'm a fan of this series and this story that Remender is building to, which I'm assuming is going to climax with the Axis event later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we hope.
Yeah. All right, so let me throw mine out there. You know, as neutral as my review sounded, I guess I'm gonna go with Batman number 31 as my click of the week this week. Only see, you know, that it's a hard issue for new readers to pick up, but you know, if you've been sticking with the zero-year storyline, there's a payoff that's being built to. So, and this issue helps very much in that regard. So, I'm gonna go with Batman number 31.
Actually, that's amazing, because I was also going to pick Batman 31 as my pick of the week.
Nice.
Click of the week. My click of the week.
Click of the week.
Yeah, like I said, everything about this book was good, from the story to the artwork to even the coloring stood out to me as being good in this issue. Like, this just felt from top to bottom like it was the best crafted book I've read in a long time.
Cool.
So there you go. Although, I do want to throw out something before we sign off for the week, before Tim does all the plugs shutting us down. I just need to rub something in Agent 70's face here for a minute.
Uh-oh.
This is what I picked up this week.
Nice!
We've got
part nice! One, why are you rubbing that in my face? I own all
two,
those.
Part 3, part 4. And these are all near mint These are all 9.0 or above.
Nice. But I've got those books signed by Walt Simonson.
Yeah, but these are in fantastic condition.
I've got those books signed by Walt Simonson.
But here's the thing.
I brought them to get them signed.
The guy I got these from, when he shipped them to me,
he went
ahead for no reason whatsoever and said, here, have a free book. And he threw in this Incredible Hulk 272,
wow,
which is the second appearance of Rocket Raccoon.
Wow. That's a generous guy right there.
Huh. So, it's funny. Wendigo's about to come back up in an X-Men story, too.
Yeah, it's Wendigo.
Like the worldwide Wendigo or something like that?
Yeah.
I saw that in the previews.
Yeah, so amazing X-Men.
Wendigo and Sasquatch on the cover there. You don't see that very often.
Well, you don't also see 60-cent comic books either, but
That's cool. So this won't be the first time you're reading those Thor books, are you?
No. This is the first time I bought them as something for the collection, like not to read.
Gotcha.
You know, it's like I had a couple copies of them before, but they were, half the back cover was ripped and whatever. It's like I got them out of like a $2 box at a convention or whatever.
True. What we call reading copies. I gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. But like I said, if you ever have the good fortune of meeting Walt Simonson and getting him to sign those books, he's super cool.
Well, he's
one of the best out there.
Last time we went to C2E2, we were talking to a company that actually sells the frames that you put up on your wall to put books in, you know, for display. And so that was my thought was I would like to have those in a display up on the wall. Like, I love the artwork. I love the storyline. I love the character of Beta Ray Bill. So that was one of those things from, high school or whatever that I wanted to commiserate.
Cool. That's very cool. I have somewhere buried in the archives the artist the IDW artist edition for what the Walt Simonson Thor run.
Yeah.
For that, for those first four or five or six issues, I think it's in it. It showcases the original art. I'm not going to keep everyone late because it is already 11 o'clock Eastern to go dig for that. But that makes me reminisce about all the good times reading Simonson Thor. That's pretty cool. I'm glad that you have that.
Well, and he's got the new the Ragnarok book coming out, which is also one of the things that kind of got me thinking about it.
How does IDW get to do artist editions of stuff?
They get the licensing. They get the product.
They're using other like Marvel characters and some of this stuff.
They get the permission.
Why is Marvel giving them permission?
They get the lawyers together and they say, hey, we can all make money off this.
Yeah, I was about to say, Marvel's getting money off of that. You know? So.
Okay, I was curious.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes companies work together, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's like Dark Horse releases figures of classic Marvel characters.
Right.
So they release classic Daredevil, Spider-Man, Captain America. They do figurines of them, but they're like $40 4-inch figurines. Like, they're super expensive for what they are, but they're highly sought after collectibles, and Dark Horse does them, so Marvel agrees to license the characters for those collectibles. So it's something along those lines where IDW does these artist editions, these treasury sized books, and Marvel, instead of trying to do it themselves and getting bogged down in the cost and trying to figure out the logistics of having it done, they just IDW says, hey, we'd like to do it, and they allow them to do it.
There you go.
Okay. You go.
And on that note, on a note of cooperation.
Good ending for Comic Book Chronicles for this week. So make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I am at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and PopCultureNetwork.com. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
Let's go, Rangers!
Sports.
And with that, we bid you adieu. So make sure to tune back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, for the next episode of the Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Yay!